I hate that bell. I probably shouldn't.
After all, it's an icon here at Hampshire College, the small liberal arts school in Amherst, Massachusetts, where I'm currently finishing up my senior year. Well, technically, I'm finishing my Division III, which is basically a senior project. In fact, this documentary, what you're listening to right now, is part of my Div 3, but I'm getting ahead of myself. You're supposed to ring the bell when you pass Div 3. In other words, when you've finished all your undergraduate work and your academic advisors say you pass, you're officially allowed to walk over to this spot near the center of campus, grab the bell by its long white rope, and ring it. Since the bell is suspended from a concrete overhang about 30 feet in the air, the sound carries across the entire campus. So towards the end of every semester for the past 4 years, just as the burden of major projects and final essays starts to feel unbearable, I start hearing the bell. Mocking me. It's like some kind of annoying town crier screaming, "What have you accomplished lately?" And no matter where I go, my dorm room, the dining hall, the radio station, I can't escape it. The one exception is a windowless computer lab in the basement of the library. It's where I'm sitting now. I've spent the better part of my college career down here. Officially, that's because I need the voiceover booth, microphones, and top-of-the-line computers that are down here. I mean, it's hard to study radio production without these things, but unofficially, I spend so much time down here because I like it. It's a sanctuary where few others go. It allows me to put my head down and concentrate on my work, but I realized recently that I may have spent a little too much time down here. And I'm not just talking about my total lack of a tan. Hampshire is a small school. There are roughly 1,500 students, 115 faculty members, and a couple hundred staff and administrators who keep the place running. But when you spend most of your time either working in a grocery store off campus or in an isolated computer lab, it can feel even smaller. Hampshire is also a young school, relatively speaking. The first class of students entered the school in 1970, but again, when you spend so much time separate from the college, it can feel even younger, like it began when you got there, and like it will end when you leave. But most importantly, Hampshire is, in the best possible way, a unique and life-changing school. It wasn't until I left the safety of my basement burrow that I really began to suspect this. It wasn't until I confronted the bell and its daunting ring that I realized I might actually be in the middle of something special. And it took more than 8 months of research, interviews, writing, and revision to figure out why anyone should care. But thanks to this wonderful medium called radio, it's only going to take another 26 minutes to explain how some people at Hampshire are poised to change the world.
Are you going to edit this?
Okay, good.
Let's start with the person who, for all intents and purposes, is in charge.
I'm Marlene Gerber-Fried. I'm the interim president at Hampshire College this year. I've taught here for 25 years. And I've talked to a lot of alums trying to identify what is it about our pedagogy that, for example, creates so many entrepreneurs. It's funny, one of our more famous alums, Ken Burns, said to me, "Marlene, just tell them it's a special sauce. And if you come, you get the recipe. And if you don't, you don't get the recipe." Obviously, that has a certain panache when Ken Burns says it. But I don't think it's like a tablespoon of this and a cup of that. What I do think is that to the extent that your education here is one that's students negotiate collaboratively with faculty members, sometimes with staff and other students, that you're learning in that process to actually advocate for yourself, be able to be convincing and clear and passionate about what you're interested in, and you gain a level of confidence in your ability to do that.
At this point, you might be wondering what's up with Hampshire's academic program. To help explain it, I went and talked to Aaron Berman,
who teaches history here. He was also in the very first class of students to enter Hampshire back in 1970.
Graduated in 75, started teaching part-time in 78, been on the full-time faculty since 81, spent some time as a dean of advising, and then basically 11 years as dean of faculty and vice president.
Berman agrees with President Fried that the Hampshire system tends to encourage confidence in its students. But this isn't because Hampshire has something other schools don't. It's what Hampshire doesn't have that creates so many fiercely independent students.
Structurally, not having departments and not having majors is huge. And I think that what Hampshire is based on is absence of departments, absence of majors, and investing students and faculty with an extraordinary amount of responsibility. You really sort of look at the building block of our curriculum, and it's a Division II committee, which is two faculty and a student who the institution trusts will come up with a coherent and rigorous concentration. What makes all that work, you know, when Hampshire really works well, is when a student forms a close relationship, you know, almost like an apprentice with a faculty member. That's pretty special. There's nothing at Hampshire that's the equivalent of a grade point average. And a grade point average is a funny kind of thing, even if you're looking at a major, right? If you start your work on a major and you're doing C-level work, and at the end you're doing A-level work, okay, so your GPA is a B or whatever. Narrative evaluation really lets you look at education much more developmentally and sort of, for me anyway, writing Division IIs, it's always about describing this is where the student started and this is where the student ended.
So no departments, no majors, no grades. It may sound like a formula for goofing off, but as Berman explains, this system tends to have a very different effect.
Not having grades and having narrative evaluations does change in subtle ways the way education is looked at both by students and faculty. Because students put together in the Division II, of course, a study, and they're continually asked, you know, why are you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? What are you going to do next? I think students look at their education as more than just a sequence of courses to acquire credit.
One model of education is that the student is the vessel. They come, they take a class, the instructor pours in the knowledge, and then you leave, and that's the value added. You got the lecture, you got the knowledge, the information from the professor. And while we have incredibly wonderful and knowledgeable professors here, that's not how they see what they're doing. They see what they're doing is mentoring and collaborating and working with students to bring students to certain levels of knowledge, expertise, and wanting to know more.
I think this is a good time to point out that the motto of Hampshire College is non satiscere. It's Latin for to know is not enough. Not surprisingly, there are a lot of things you can point to at Hampshire and say, that's the motto in action.
However you want to interpret the to know is not enough, which sometimes takes you in a direction of social justice, sometimes it takes you in a direction of community service, sometimes it takes you in a direction of greater civic responsibility and citizen participation. I don't think these are all interchangeable words, but they're all about using what you've got as an individual to make your community, your society, and the world a better place.
Okay, so everything we've talked about so far, the self-designed course of study, the use of narrative evaluations instead of grades, the big-picture approach to education and social justice, you can find those things at other schools. Maybe not all in the same place, but you can find them. So what's distinctive about Hampshire is not that it's got this unusual structure. When you look at how the student body has taken these principles and put them into action, then things start to get a little more interesting. To explain what I'm talking about, I'd like to introduce you to Hampshire's registrar, Bobby Stewart.
How long have you been with Hampshire? 30 years.
30 years.
Yes.
I talked to Bobby because it's her job to oversee an office that every single Hampshire student has to go to at least once.
I think what's unusual about Hampshire is that students and faculty feel very comfortable heading for the top when they have an issue. And I've always been impressed by their willingness to leap in where they see injustice or an issue that needs addressing, whether people want to improve and change the academic program or just how we're handling what we're currently doing now. As a registrar, do I love it that students are free to question authority? No, because I'm trying to say, look, here's a deadline. You really have to follow it. But that's, I'm really mostly joking about that one.
Again, Aaron Berman.
Students really feel like they own the institution in the sense of they're invested in that they feel very protective of and concerned about the academic program, and they have strong opinions, and they feel empowered to voice them, which I really like.
Both Stewart and Berman are alluding to events that I witnessed firsthand. For example, in late April and early May of 2010, there was a proposal to move Hampshire's admissions office to a different building. For many complex reasons, there were a lot of people who didn't like this idea. Without any prompting from faculty, staff, or administrators, several groups of students began organizing a large-scale resistance to the move.
Our school! Our school!
Some students went door-to-door collecting signatures. Others started distributing information and a call to action over YouTube and over Hampshire's internet radio station. Still others put up flyers, hung banners, and started conversations about the proposal wherever they went. Now, to me, at the time, it all seemed a little overdone. But remember, I was still under self-imposed subterranean isolation. In the end, there was a big protest march with hundreds and hundreds of students. Between that giant display and all the other activity that had been going on around campus, it was clear where most students stood on the issue. The proposed move was shut down. The students won. Now, there's something I haven't told you, though it should come as no surprise. Even with its sophisticated and unusual academic program, even with a student body that is passionate, involved, and organized, Hampshire has problems. And no one is more familiar with these than Acting President Marlene Gerber-Fried.
I think we need resources. We need to fix what we've got, that is to say, buildings. You know, it looks to me like for a very long time, what Hampshire has done, which does express the right priority, is taken scarce resources and allocated them so that the academic program remains terrific and the physical plant less so. And so, it's kind of like that bill is coming due now. You can't do that forever.
When I was dean of faculty, we expanded the size of the faculty.
Again, Aaron Berman.
I think we added something like, in the end, like 10 faculty positions. We tried to address issues around the buildings, but that was a lower priority than adding those faculty positions. Well, the buildings are at least 10 years older now than then, and no one at the campus says deferred maintenance isn't a priority. It's just in this array of having really high priorities, which of the high priorities is going to come to the very top?
But before we get into too many of those other really high priorities, we need to talk a little more about this deferred maintenance thing. To help explain it, I went and talked with Mark Spiro, Hampshire's Vice President for Finance and Administration. He's kind of like our CFO.
When I came here
in 2006,
the allocation for deferred maintenance was about $400,000 or $500,000 a year. Now, in fact, it should be about 2% of the replacement value of all of your buildings. So we were allocating 500,000. We needed to be up around 4 million. And that's the ongoing problem that we have here. The result is that our deferred maintenance backlog, our inventory, is going up just about geometrically. And if we don't do something about 10 years out, it just about doubles. And then you have a problem that's almost intractable. You'll never have enough money to bring that deferred maintenance backlog down to where it needs to be.
As a student, I've encountered some pretty visceral examples of what this deferred maintenance backlog actually looks like. The most visible and most often cited example is Cole Science Center. Now, despite the fact that the classrooms and offices in Cole contain some of the most brilliant people I've ever met, among students and faculty alike, heck, even Acting President Freed's office is in Cole, it is in sad, sad shape. The labs are out of date. In heavy rain, parts of it become flooded. Now, again, it's not like anyone's denying the problem. But as a young school, Hampshire's resources are very limited.
Hampshire derives about 91% of its operating income from tuition, room, and board, and about 3% from the annual fund, and about 3% from our endowment draw. So we are heavily tuition, room, and board dependent. Now let me compare it with some other institutions with which I'm familiar. Smith derives about 45% from tuition, room, and board, about 15% from gifts, the annual fund, and about 14% from its endowment. Mount Holyoke derives about 55% from tuition, room, and board, 10% from gifts, its annual fund, and about 3.2% from its endowment draw. They, like we, have a relatively modest endowment. So as you can see, we're much, much more tuition, room, and board dependent than some of our Valley peers.
Now, this is where the big myth about Hampshire comes from. The myth that Hampshire can't raise money. People say it's too weird or poorly run or too small or too big. I've heard these kinds of stories from students, alumni, even people unconnected to the institution. I won't name names because it will save those people the embarrassment of being wrong. The reason they're wrong is, well, why don't I let Mark Spiro give you the short answer?
Are we likely to become less dependent on tuition, room, and board over time? We have to be. And I think the answer is yes. We'll have more alumni. Those alumni will be older, and many of whom will have developed disposable wealth. Disposable wealth is typically distributed to charities by those who are in their late 60s or 70s. We don't have any alumni in that category yet, but we certainly will. And that's going to change the ratio of tuition, room, and board to the annual fund at a minimum. You know, the other thing that will happen is that we'll start getting more bequests to endowment. And so I expect that ratio to change over time. I don't think there's any question about it.
But there's a long answer to Hampshire's fiscal naysayers as well. And it starts with a look at Hampshire's history. Aaron Berman, who you'll remember has not only been at Hampshire for the better part of 40 years, he's also a professor of history, puts it this way.
The story of Hampshire, particularly in the early years, I mean, we're in a lot stronger financial shape now, is the people who really kind of were here in the first, you know, 20 years were miracle makers. You know, the place was so undercapitalized, and somehow or other they made it work. And, you know, we're in a lot stronger position now.
All right, so just because he calls Hampshire's founders miracle makers doesn't mean Berman thinks they were perfect.
There's always been this kind of common view. You know, it's when the college opened in September of 1970, it was perfection. And then ever since, you know, usually the code word is becoming more like Amherst College. That's always the code word. And which I think is a misreading of history, because having been there in 1970, believe me, that it was no Garden Eden.
Berman's point is that the school has been through worse. Besides, I haven't even told you about Hampshire's ace in the hole.
We want the education to be accessible to as many people as can be successful here, which of course is the segue to resources, that we really need resources. We need money to support all the amazing ideas. This place is always like bursting with ideas, and hopefully the strategic planning process will at least give us some things we can put our arms around and say, okay, well, these are the things we can do, and then we're going to have a really great list of things which we'll have to, you know, wait for another day.
Hang on, I want to point out three very important words from that statement.
Strategic planning process.
I started this story in September 2010. Back then, the strategic planning process was still being, well, planned. But as the year went on, I started spending more time above ground, and those three words started popping up everywhere. A Strategic Planning Committee, or SPC, was formed. It's got students, staff, faculty, alumni, board members, everyone who has a stake in the future of Hampshire has a representative on the SPC. Their job, to put it simply, is to come up with a long-term plan for Hampshire's success. And not just in terms of money. The SPC looks at everything from the academic program to proposed building projects. Now, just the fact that Hampshire has the SPC is pretty cool. It's indicative of a philosophy that the best ideas don't always come from the top, and that everyone at a college has an equal stake in its success. But to rely on one group of people to make decisions that affect the whole school would not be, how can I put this? It wouldn't be very Hampshire. No, the Hampshire thing to do would be to provide some medium through which all members of the community can have an equal say in these big decisions. So, the SPC put together the Visioning Forums, a two-day community-wide event. The goal of the forums was, basically, to get everyone on the same page, to figure out what the community at large considers its highest priorities, and then get the ball rolling on addressing them. Furthermore, the forums were designed to operate in the fairest, most democratic way possible. I asked one of the students who attended the first of the four forums to describe the process to me.
Hi, my name is Jeremy Comill. I think the forum was amazing. I mean, we started and went back into small groups and discussed.
These were small groups of five or six people, always with a mix of students, staff, and faculty. And they would basically discuss what they'd like to see Hampshire become. Everything from more active in social justice to greener to smaller to bigger.
And everything that we said and agreed upon as a small group made it to the overall consensus because it was put on little post-it papers.
These were giant post-its, for the record. Big enough so they could be shown to the whole room, and then the whole room would decide on a category for that giant post-it. So, for example, if a small group suggested hire more professors, the whole room might decide to put that in the category student-to-faculty ratio. Then, and this is the fun part, everybody was given six tiny sticky dots, little green labels. And they were told to stick one dot to every category they thought was important. Or, if you thought something was extra important, you could stick two dots to it.
So when we had the votes on that, you could really see where us as a group stood. And it was very different than what I expected. And we always have people who are outspoken or complain really strongly about something, which is good because that's how we evolve. People see something they don't like and they keep going. But this way, you could see everyone soft-spoken or loud-spoken and really get a better consensus of at least this one group.
The SPC Visioning Forums were facilitated by Jay Vogt, a Hampshire alum. And it was while talking to Jay that it really finally hit me what was so special about Hampshire. Because here was an example of democracy in action. Here, a reverence for the individual and a respect for the community were flourishing side by side. Here were ideals that some might call lofty but impractical, such as commitments to community-wide dialogue and an unconventional approach to problem solving, and it was not only working, it was picking up steam. Here's Jay.
Well, our first forum, we had 10 tables. Second forum, we had 12 tables. Third forum, we had 15 tables, and we have 20 in the room. You know, you'd like to think that people have gone away and said, you know, this isn't so bad. It's actually kind of fun. So if you haven't been, you weren't planning on going, you should change your mind, you should show up. That's nice to see. That's like an energy building among the whole community. People have an opening here through a process like this, and they fill it with their energy and their vitality, their hopes, their dreams, their passion, their enthusiasm, their stories, and nobody has been shy about filling up that space here. It's been a beautiful thing.
The priorities that came out of the SPC Visioning Forums were the same priorities I'd heard voiced by some of Hampshire's longest-standing employees, such as Aaron Berman and Bobby Stewart, more than 3 months earlier. But now, it was clear that their concerns were shared by hundreds of other people, from first-year students to long-standing staff, even parents and alumni.
The top three issues have been pretty consistent. Space is a huge issue. Financial security and stability is another big one. A third one that's really large is around reputation or brand or how Hampshire is perceived in the outside world and how that links up with its desire to actually make a contribution and make a difference in the world. Make a difference in the world. Make a difference in the world.
My name's Colin Twitchell, F78, work in the Lummelson Center.
I'm Jessica, I'm from the admissions office.
Hi, I'm Cameron Feary, I'm a Division I student.
Division II student.
Div 3 student.
I'm an alum.
Alum and a trustee.
When we at Hampshire at our best, one value we embody is holistic development.
When we at Hampshire are at our best, one value we embody is critical thinking and engagement in interlocking communities.
A non-hierarchical culture that permits creativity and experimentation.
When we are at our best, one value we embody is doing what we love with support.
Community collaboration and engagement inside and outside the classroom.
Agency, personal, group, and institutional.
Courageous innovation.
Unbound critical engagement.
We are willing to struggle through the to find the gold.
You might be out there wondering, hey, if this is a vision forum, when are we going to talk about the future? So that would be now.
Improve faculty and staff to student ratio.
Lower faculty
and staff to student ratio.
Community space.
Campus accessibility.
Community space for students.
Community design space for community center additional.
Creating and rejuvenating physical spaces.
Developing community centers.
Physical, social and virtual community
existing spaces on campus to support ongoing and new community activities and academic programs.
Sustainability. Grow endowment.
We want to increase the amount of
deferred
stability. Financial aid.
Need blind admissions for a diverse,
more robust financial aid program.
Institutional innovation.
More money.
Better and more secure financial plan linked to articulated.
And develop a strong economic priority. Footing and model.
Clarify Hampshire's brand. Hampshire's more compelling differentiation.
A leader in progressive, innovative liberal arts
like
education.
To elevate and promote our
education
academic
of Hampshire's educational strengths to the public at large.
Accentuate our experimental
the
academic
the
philosophy.
For the learning needs of the 21st
conceptions
century.
Keep our
Hampshire.
Methodology experimental, 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 experimental. Experimental, experimental, experimental.
Today, Hampshire is what it has always been, a continuous experiment. It's just entering a new phase. Now, it won't be easy to take the ideas generated at the forums and turn them into actions, but it won't be divisive either. The Hampshire community knows where it stands. We've got our priorities in order. And as a student, that makes me feel good because I know that ultimately, when you get right down to it, all of this is for my sake. Though not without its problems, it is clear from its dedication to constant improvement that Hampshire wants more than anything to watch its students succeed. This place, it's got a feeling to it, a little hum in the air that seems to say, go for it. Succeed, and we'll all know if you take the time and open yourself up to the sensation, you can hear it. From the sustainable farm to the blacksmith forge, from the dorms to the dining hall, from the basement of the library to the tip of the tallest tree, you can hear us reaching our goals. And if we can do this, what can't we do? Forgiving the Bell was produced by me, Andy Locke, as part of my Division III senior project at Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts. Thank you to my Division III committee, Becky Miller and John Bruner, for their guidance, support, and editing help. For more information, just go to andylocke.net. That's Andy, L-O-C-K-E.net. Thanks for listening.